Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe, where the extroverts will have a cup of coffee with you and the introverts will leave you alone. A special shout out to all of our caffeinators in France. Bonjour, parlez-vous français? We would like to thank all of our caffeinators for your continued support by repping our merchandise, to our Patreons, Robin, Liz, Sandra, Nikki, Liza, Jesse, Nicole, Megan, Lauren, Merrill, Erica, Joseph, Susan, Karen, and yes, Dave. Thank you so much for your support. We really do appreciate it and continuing to download our episodes. If this is your first time to the Vet Tech Cafe, we hope you like it here. You can head over to vettechcafe.com for all of the info about who Dave and I are and why we do this, links to past episodes, link to our website, or link to our merchandise store, all of that good stuff. We're on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and also have a YouTube channel for our Taproom episodes. So like and subscribe to us at your favorite place and your favorite podcast player. Always, we appreciate likes, comments, all that good stuff. So thank you very much for your support. Dave, what's on your mind? How's it going out there?
I'm actually getting back into the workforce. You know, I've been doing a lot of admin stuff and not working shifts. And I decided that I wanted to get back into it. And so I'm working a surgery shift tomorrow. And then I got a couple surgery shifts later on in the week. So
nice.
I'm prepping to get back out there and hopefully my scrubs still fit and all that stuff. Cause it's been a couple months, since I've worked routinely, but, I'm getting back out there and
nice.
I'm kind of excited to get back and keep up with my skills. Cause that's one thing I worry about is, you know, you and I give lectures on things and I often worry about relevance. Like, I mean, some of the stuff that I give talks on, like shock and things like that, a lot of the hands-on and life scenarios don't really change all that much. But I do worry that some of the stuff that I'm speaking about may not be the most up-to-date information. So I need to get out there and be relevant, I guess. So I'm not going to go back working 40 hours a week because I do still do a lot of admin stuff for my company. But I'm going to get back out there and get out with the people.
Nice.
Cause I feel like I need that. And also I just need to get out of the house every now and then.
Yeah, I hear you there.
How are things out there? You guys still swimming from the huge storm you guys had?
No, we have dried out. Well, at least where I am here, we were actually spared the bulk. Like, well, I mean, we still got, I think, 8 inches of rain over 2 or 3 days, which is almost an entire season's worth of rain for us. But a little bit to our north and a little bit to our south, LA and San Diego got even more than we did, and they had a lot more flooding and a lot more of that stuff. But nothing too catastrophic here.
Are you guys I don't know exactly where you are. Are you guys like elevated? Are you like up?
We're close to 1,000 feet elevation where I am. And like, we don't really get snow here, but maybe a couple hundred feet above us, we'll get snow maybe like once a season.
So your house isn't like at big risk for flooding.
Correct.
You're kind of up. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But our local ski resorts, Big Bear, which is like an hour and a half from me, just this one storm got 8 feet of snow.
Wow.
And
dang.
I mean, there's many seasons they don't even get 8 feet at all. So, it was a big one. But I loved it.
And also just for reference that we're recording this in the beginning of February and this is probably going to upload, I don't know, Mid to late March
or something. Yeah.
Mid to late March. Yeah.
Yeah. Good job on the timestamp there. I forgot all about that. Yeah. Well, enough about the weather. Let's go ahead and jump into to what we got going on today. We've got another awesome guest coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. We have Simon Chavez, who is an accomplished locum veterinary technician with a wealth of expertise in critical care, medicine, and anesthesia. He got his associates in science and veterinary technology from Penn Foster, then a bachelor's degree in psychology biology from Northeastern Illinois. And as if that wasn't enough, he got two master's degrees, one in veterinary medicine from Massey University and a master's in biomedicine with a focus on veterinary medicine and surgery from University of Missouri. Beyond his clinical role, he places strong emphasis on team development, encouraging continuous learning, upholding the highest standards of care. And his commitment to the community extends to nonprofit boards, where he focuses on serving underserved communities. And in his leisure time, enjoys the thrill of skydiving, the rush of downhill skiing, and the serenity of sailing on the vast expanse of the Great Lakes. And if you follow him on social media at all, you probably are very well aware of his devoted travel companion and feline friend, Bruce Wayne, who I'm sure could tell us stories of travel all his own. But Simon, thank you very much for taking some time out to come by the Vet Tech Cafe. Welcome. What can we get you for a cup of coffee?
I would take a iced Americano any day.
All right. All right. Coming right up. If you don't mind, take us through your career path, kind of what got you into veterinary medicine, some stops along the way, and, you know, obviously the education component too, we're going to ask a lot about, and then we'll jump off from there.
Certainly. So it started back in the early 1900s. Since childhood, I actually remember that I always wanted to be in medicine. And I do have two family members who are MDs, and they practice outside of the United States in Mexico. And certainly during the times that we met at reunions or just holidays, you know, just was fascinated with the stories that they had to mention to the rest of the family. And during the high school years, I kind of realized that I needed to make a decision whether to do pre-vet or pre-med. My interest, obviously, with animals had been since I was a kid. As many of probably you guys can relate, I was that kid that used to bring cats at odd times of the day in the week, and my mom will be like, why is there a cat in your room? Or there will be a bunny, or there will be a bird. And I'm pretty sure that the Chicago Animal King Control probably had me already on a list. I used to call them a lot, seeing the neighborhood animals. And that obviously has carried on with me in that passion of saving animals. During high school years, it was kind of a big decision making for me to, again, decide whether to do pre-vet or pre-medicine. I did focus a lot into medicine, probably focusing to an MD program or a nursing program. Well, that kind of changed a little bit by the expansion of friendship and some work with community at a nonprofit. Someone actually recommended me to work at this general hospital in Huntington Beach, California, where it all started. So started there and basically just as a kennel assistant. My first day, I do remember that I walked in and there was this little Sheltie that went and grabbed her. This is probably within the first hour or maybe hour and a half of my shift. Went and grabbed her from the cage. I think they were going to do an examination, and I got bit. So I'm running to the treatment room with bloody hands. And, you know, now I'm thinking, here's this little kid, you know, starting on his first days, and he gets bit. Stayed there for quite a couple years and certainly learning the challenges that Vet Med had to bring on with all staff to see a wide range of species, as we, that hospital particularly, was pretty much exotics and small animals, dogs and cats. And occasionally we saw a couple equines within some of the regions around the area. So it was a very nice introduction for me to Vet Med while I was still trying to focus on undergrad and pre-medicine. I kind of got the idea from several coworkers to start an associate's in veterinary medicine veterinary technology, which was Penn Foster. And it was just a brand new program back then. Stay there during that time, finish the program, and then eventually moved to relocate back to Chicago, where I went ahead and finished my bachelor's in biology and psychology at Northwestern Illinois University. While that transitioning work in Chicago, I did a little bit of work in some of the hospitals in Chicago, mostly all GPs, to eventually, within a couple of years, transition into emergency and did some shelter as well during that time. Finished my program at Northeastern, graduated, and then it was kind of a big decision-making for me whether to not apply to take the MCAT and apply to a med school or go into and apply to a med school. So I took a couple of years to just rethink kind of things a little bit, take a break, enjoy the city, enjoy my family a little bit, and stayed basically a couple of years still working at some of the general practices in Chicago, and started then going into a emergency hospital, the only one that we had in the city back then, and kind of made me realize that I really wanted to stay in this field. I just needed to make a decision probably to focus and stay in as a veterinary technician, and then probably move into something else with my career path in humans. So psychology certainly was a big, big interest for me. And I applied to a master's in clinical psychology, thinking that that was going to be something that I was going to be enjoying. So I did a year worth over at Penn University. I was a distance program. I did a one-year clinical internship at Children's Memorial Hospital. And that was the key marker to see that I really probably was not going to be the best fit for me in a long run. Especially with some of the cases that you get exposed, some of the stories that were just too much to carry on, at home. And I really had to one day sit with my mother, and she asked me, she's like, I don't think this is pretty much something that will make you happy. So I think you probably just need to stick with veterinary medicine for the meantime, and then maybe things can develop later on in life. So continue with as a veterinary technician in Chicago, several hospitals there, and that's where I started doing relief due to the shortage. So early in the early years of staffing, I was able to cover several shifts in multiple general practices in the city, and still being able to cover a couple shifts in the emergency room, and that lasted for a couple years. So kind of needed to make a decision. Whether the grants that I had and scholarships for my master's in clinical psychology to carry that on in my profession. So I applied to the master's in biomedicine, emphasis in veterinary medicine and surgery with Missouri University. Got approved, and it was certainly another challenge of another program to go to long hours while still having semi part-time to full-time at times. Working hospital in the hospitals in Chicago. I did that for maybe about 4 years until I decided to take a break from academia back again and studies. Worked in a couple in a shelter for about 2 years, and I certainly can blame that to some of the commercials that we saw on TV. I think that everyone kind of has an attachment in veterinary medicine to hearing even that song. And you're mm-hmm. like, oh my God, we need to go and save as many animals as we can. Certainly guilty of that. After that, I had to kind of see the changes in the field and whether or not, continuing in the industry as in the clinical aspect, or make a decision and potentially go into industry. And that was kind of a decision making that I think all of us come to at some point, deciding whether to stay in practice or change career paths. For me, actually, was moving to San Francisco, where I took a position there with a hospital focusing specialty in critical care medicine, which I stayed there for 5 years. And during that time, I had finished my second master's in veteran medicine through Massey University, traveled to New Zealand for 3 months, which was a beautiful time. I certainly missed the commute there. But it is certainly a very, very nice time and exposure to the culture, the people there, and moving back to relocating back to San Francisco. I stay there for about a year. While during that time, with some family friends, while we were on a vacation, I came across one of the residents that worked at one of the specialty hospitals in Nevada. We met, and she was like, "Why didn't you come over to Vegas? It's a short trip, and maybe we can go ahead have you come in part time, maybe on the weekends, and based on your availability." So I did that, jumped into that, and that is the starting point of where I started doing national local work. Started with Vegas, transitioned to LA, from LA residents, that transitioned to other locations and other hospitals, sort of calling me like, "Will you be open to coming in and helping us?" So that brought me into the East Coast. And from there, it has been now in 9 hospitals in total. Certainly a significant amount of traveling. Very, very privileged to meet all this new teams and hospitals and amazing individuals, and certainly learn from them. And certainly to learn from me with any changes that may benefit the hospital or any patient at any given time, given the availability also of having extra help during COVID. And certainly that has also been transitioned to up even to Alaska, which I had never imagined that I was going to go ahead and be in Alaska working. It's one fantastic and wonderful team up there.
One of the questions we have later is what brought you into locum work, but it sounds like you've been a nomad pretty much your whole adult life before you even started doing all this stuff, right?
Yes. It has been kind of a little bit of a challenge for setting new goals and challenging sometimes kind of like the norm. I don't think that it's more fascinating, I think, and certainly more the momentum of continuing new changes and seeing what else is there. Has been certainly since a very early age.
Yeah. So before we get into a bunch of the other questions about that, we always like to ask our guests, where do you see the veterinary technician profession right now? You're going to have a very unique take on this because for most of our guests, they know their state. They know their state tech association, the stuff that's going on in their state, but you are all over the place. So overall, where do you see the state of our profession?
Well, certainly, at the national level, I think that we are very short staff, and that has been a challenge that we have seen through several years. And obviously, this is what is keeping me very busy overall. During COVID, we saw that challenge even to its fullest with people leaving the profession. And we have seen certainly that in the human side. I think that there are the challenges that we were faced by in the years prior of COVID, and that was pay benefits and a work-life balance. And I think that certainly carries on to today. I think that some hospitals and some areas have addressed that a little bit better. So it certainly has changed for the best or for the better in some areas, but the challenge still continues in others. I think certainly we have seen through credentialing and the title protection that we have seen, changing recently in some of the states. So that is sometimes a barrier for individuals. One thing that I have actually certainly noticed is the amount of the technicians or assistants that are looking into getting credential now more focused on a distance program, a distance learning program, or doing a alternative route in some states, such as California. So it is a momentum, I think, that I'm seeing at a national level, and I hope that it continues.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I think the access to like the distance learning, I think, is going to help out with the numbers, because it gives people the option to do that from, you know, while you're actually working and being able to accomplish that.
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree. And I'm curious, so locum work, first off, for those that maybe don't work or, you know, haven't worked in a hospital that has locums, just define what that is a little bit. And then like how, you know, you kind of talked about just kind of how it snowballed in that, but like, I'm very curious about, you know, you go into these places in different states, like, do you have your own rate that regardless of where you are, you know, it's this fee, or is it like, you know, does the hospital have a relief rate? Like, basically, how have you been able to make the logistics of all of this work for so long doing locum work? And I'd also like to know, like, where is home for you right now? Where is home base?
Home is based back in Chicago.
Chicago. Okay. Okay.
3 to 4 days out of the month.
Oh gosh.
it's surprising that I land. It always feels like I'm home. But then I'm just like, wow, it's ready to pack and go. And a lot of people actually in some of the hospitals that I go to, they're like, so are you still in San Francisco or Chicago or New York? Like, where is home nowadays? I'm like, well, technically the airport, it has been like for the past month. But I do have, you know, a unit, and I have a closet, and I think Bruce Wayne has several toys in, you know, in our condo in Chicago. That we are zooming out there a lot. As far as working the logistics of it, I do usually look at the pay scale or rate on the region. So based on state or region, obviously the Midwest is going to be very different to the West Coast, and the West Coast is going to be very much to the East Coast. Depends also if it's going to be a specialty hospital, also academia. Obviously, Jeff, you have been in academia, so certainly, you know, the challenges with that, negotiating any pay. So I usually leave it to the discretion of the hospital, and they typically come pretty close, or we negotiate a rate that basically will be feasible for providing one, the housing or transportation as a premium on top of the hourly rate. And such, and some hospitals do are pretty nice to pay both the transportation, the housing, and then the ground transportation, whether it's a rental car or Lyft and Ubers, versus others depending on the region. If it's a little bit more expensive to be in that region, as far as housing, then I'll be responsible for the housing, and then they fly in. So it really depends on what best works for the hospital in the long run.
Gotcha.
And just to be clear, Simon, this is a one man show, right? You don't have people that are helping you like research, like what are the rates in these areas? This is all you, right?
Yep. This is all me since the beginning. I think there was a hope to incorporate people into it, and I just realized that maybe people do not want to commit to this crazy lifestyle.
I mean, for some people that I think they would love it.
I know. I mean, obviously now where I'm at in life, I know I couldn't do it, but gosh, I mean, 10-ish years ago, like, and I think, I mean, locum work has been in human nursing for a long time. You know, I mean, human nurses have been on travel contracts and move around a lot.
For decades, and, probably, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just not been something in veterinary medicine, you know, that I'm all that familiar with. I know, I think Veg has some travel technicians, and maybe other places do too. But I, you know, as somebody who loves travel, like I don't know, it sounds very, very appealing to me. I think I would absolutely love it. But like you were saying, you know, just the planning, the forethought, all of the things that have to go into it. And then, but you're also not at these places for 2 or 3 months at a time. It might be just a few days and then you're off to somewhere else, right?
Certainly. So just like you mentioned, you know, in the human sector, it certainly was a little bit seen probably in the early, maybe 2020s. Certainly after COVID, it has been growing. I am seeing that a little bit increase in actually in our profession with locum specialists. So critical care and internists, especially radiologists, will be able to work and relocate easily. So I think that, you know, certainly seeing that growing in our area, in our field, it is there. Variant technicians, I think I've seen them more on a regional aspect of it than a national. And I hope that, you know, that I can change probably in the next coming years. As far as that goes, I mean, it certainly does involve a significant amount of work, not only the traveling and the exchanges of time zone, and Brisbane can certainly go ahead and tell you that sometimes we wake up and we're like, what state are we? Where are we? And then we have to open the window and be like, oh, okay, we're in Boston. Oh, okay, we're in LA. So it does challenge you a couple times there to really keep a track of things.
I bet.
And how did you build up this network of hospitals? Was it just word of mouth? Do you have a website that people are finding you? How did you expand
like,
so much?
Yeah, like how does one end up working for a hospital in Alaska when you're based down here? You know?
Yes. A lot of it actually has been through word of mouth, and those is going to be through residents or interns that you work with, and eventually, again, they transition into other hospitals, and they're like, hey, we need help. Do you mind reaching out? So then I get an email or an invitation through the administration team. We kind of talk and negotiate things, and then we set up a date, and we start, and usually my first 2 days of working shifts, I end up just kind of seeing where things are and then jumping and run with it, you know, whether it's going to be some critical case in the ICU or a complicated anesthetic case, or sometimes they are certainly very gentle and they give me an ER shift where I'm able to kind of get slowly adapted to their protocols and kind of guidelines. And obviously, as a visitor, you always have to be respectful. I am an owner and I am a visitor, so I try not to, you know, change anything unless there's an invitation for it. But usually it's pretty, and I'm actually surprised even by this, that I'm pretty easy to readapt to each hospital very easily. You know, whether they tape their catheters this particular way, or the flow of their hospital, you know, patient walks in through ER, gets admitted, and then specialists. And yeah, I have been surprised that I'm able to jump into the hospital, start my shift, and I'm like, oh, yep, this is how the protocol is here. Let's reassess ourselves. Let's change our mindset a little bit, and then do it their ways to minimize any drastic changes or at least the flow of their work.
Simon, we know each other. I do relief work as well. And a lot of times I'll be interviewing people for my company. And one of the things I always tell them is that not every place is hiring you to fix them. They're hiring you to fill a shift. Do you ever get the shifts where they want you to come in and say, hey, can you look at our protocols? Can you help with workflow? Do you ever get those requests?
Yes, I do. Especially I think during the COVID time, you know, everyone was kind of seeing what best worked for the hospitals. And I think that was a challenge overall that every hospital faced to kind of see what was the best workflow for everyone. And sometimes I see that more, or I get invited to assess their training guidelines more than anything, their nursing SOPs. And guidelines from the ICU, whether there is any infection control, certainly do jump into that. And those are, you know, very straightforward projects. I usually work with a key member of administration, maybe a floor supervisor or a veterinary technician manager, and then work along with the clinical technicians to kind of develop and roll those new SOPs or new projects or new changes.
You mentioned COVID a couple of times. So like what happened for you during COVID? Did you just kind of have to anchor down where you were because of lack of travel and just work at clinics where your home base was then, and then kind of slowly go back to what you're doing now? Or what did all that look like?
It was very interesting. I was actually not expecting, to be as busy during COVID. I think during the beginning month of COVID, when more of the, some of the states were isolating and having restrictions, I actually ended up taking 2 weeks off with my previous cat. So we, I think it was in San Francisco, and ended up basically staying in a hotel for 2 weeks, worked at one hospital, and started then getting emails from most of the hospitals saying, you know, will you be comfortable to come in and help us during this time? I know that, you know, restrictions may be a little bit hard to get you through, but we will certainly be able to facilitate that with our state or even any agency in the city. So it actually kept me pretty busy. I think during COVID, I worked the whole year. I may have taken only 1 month in total through the whole year off, and that was just to recuperate. Never acquired COVID.
Wow, props to you.
Yeah. You know, the testing certainly was harsh. I was testing about every 3 days. So usually I was in the hospital for 1 week, take 24 to 70, 48 hours off, test, and then before I went to the other hospital, tested back again, and we'll be testing equally of time. There was probably a couple of times where maybe the coverage was a little bit more extended up to 3 weeks, especially if there were several technicians out on medical leave, then I would just cover until some of them felt better and then came back into to their hospital for their shifts.
Gotcha.
Well, did the testing, was that your decision to do all that, or was that something that was requested by the hospitals?
It was mainly my decision. I think some of the hospitals just did require to test at the beginning week of it. But obviously I wanted to make sure that I was not, I certainly was the one carrying it, you know, back and forward from different city and different states. So, and also the airlines, I think I do miss that that time in traveling. I mean, it was amazing. And I obviously I hope that we never have to see that ever again. But if, getting into the airport, maybe about five minutes, 10 minutes before departure, and just going through security and, you know, just getting seated there. I mean, most of the planes were pretty empty. So sometimes that was a little frightening to see that there's only like five people in the whole plane. And you're like, wow, this is pretty lonely. And as time went through, then I started seeing more agencies with medical providers, a lot of airline workers and pilots most of the time sitting next to you. And obviously we needed to take all precaution needed. So testing certainly was a fundamental part to make sure that we introduced something new to a team.
Well, Jeff, I didn't think that we would have more COVID questions on this show.
Yeah, I know, right.
But here we are.
But here we are.
We are about halfway through here. So why don't we take our quick break here? We'll pay some bills. We'll all take a COVID test and we'll be back after the break.
The Vet Tech Cafe is sponsored by BetterHelp. Caffeinators, at the Vet Tech Cafe, you know we like to focus on mental health. If you're struggling with depression, burnout, compassion fatigue, or any of the other mental health challenges we discuss on our podcast, getting professional help is a great first step.
We all need help with things like learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries, which empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major mental health challenges.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Dave, I've used BetterHelp. I had really good success with it. I really like that it was entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can also switch therapists at any time for no additional cost.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. They really make it easy for you to get the help you need.
Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/vettechcafe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vettechcafe. It's time to invest in yourself. Be well, caffeinators.
Welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe, everybody, where we are traveling state to state, country to country, serving you coffee from all the regions of the globe and from the states. Simon, we just had our ad for BetterHelp, and one of the questions they always like to ask after that ad is, how do you manage your own mental health? I realize traveling can be a stressor, and how do you stay sane with being all over the globe?
Yes, I think that we can kind of change that by seasons, right? Obviously, yeah. If it's during the winter, you kind of go skiing, although I have not been out skiing this season, just a little bit busy. And
well, I hear that California has a lot of snow.
Yes, we do.
So skiing typically during the winter, and certainly taking the boat out in Lake Michigan during the summer. Although, you know, with traveling, obviously that gets a little bit hard to kind of facilitate that through. So I did make this kind of change with my commute. Before, in the planes, I used to always try to catch up with emails and read, you know, on articles. And obviously we're probably behind on three journals that I need to read. And it just kept seeming like I was never leaving work. Like it was just a constant catch up. So I think probably within my second year of starting this, I decided to really try to keep the airtime for myself and be able to disassociate from anything and everything, you know, on the ground. So I do take that time to catch up on TV, indulge on the TV shows that I'm like dreading to catch up with, or that people are already, you know, seasons ahead of me. Read a good book. Now with audiobook, certainly makes it much easier. I always have to keep an eye on Bruce Wayne to make sure that he stays out of trouble more than anything. And I think that he's doing the same thing. As soon as we get in the plane, he sleeps, and certainly napping is one of the other options for it.
Nice.
For sure. So, you know, one question I have with working in so many different states. Now, you're obviously a Penn Foster grad, so you're an AVMA grad. Like the states that you work in regularly, which I know to be California, I know you do a lot of work in New England, and I'm guessing still Illinois and Alaska. Like, do you get credentialed in those states, or are you just credentialed like in your home state and then you know go practice other places on relief? Like how do you manage the licensing part of it?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a little bit of a challenge at the beginning, but it actually has been pretty easy and straightforward. So license in the state of Illinois, and actually then transition and transfer my licenses to California or Massachusetts. And even Alaska, obviously there's a different certification license or register, but it has been pretty streamlined, maybe a little bit of delay during the COVID time. I think some of the states did offer an emergency licensing for it, and certainly took advantage of that during those times, especially for New York. But other than that, it has been pretty straightforward to request these state board if I will be able to carry on that, and usually it's just a matter of a couple weeks to get transfer. There are some states that are, you know, licensing is not required, and certainly has been kind of a little bit delayed, and probably that will be the state of Texas. Typically have not achieved that. I think out of us, Austin, Texas, I don't see myself too much in the state, part of that city, so I wouldn't particularly want to go ahead and have a transfer there. It's certainly active in the five other states.
Gotcha.
Yeah, when I was in Austin, they said the licensing doesn't really matter all that much to the technicians, which is really sad. But
yes, and hopefully we can change that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many? Just trying to think about what your schedule is. Like, do you have? I know you said that sometimes you feel like you're working all the time. Do you have like time where you're like, I'm not going to work, or like how often are you working? Like, are you working week on, week off, or what's your schedule like?
Well, in the past few years, something we have gone through a little bit of transition with that to see what best works. And in reality, it's basically the demand of the profession, right? So I have to be available to be able to cover the shifts when the hospitals need it the most. I do try to take at least a week off between maybe 4 weeks. So I'll probably go 3 weeks. And then if there's like a birthday, wedding, or any event that I need to attend, usually we'll go ahead and take that week off and plan accordingly based on the state that I'm traveling to kind of reroute. As the years have gone, I am a little bit more vigilant about being able to track the weather, not only the weather, but also the air traffic in some areas. So during the winter, I try to stay within one region, come down to the south, come back then up north, and then end up in Alaska. And then once I'm in Alaska, I come north, typically land Midwest, and then transition from that. And that usually helps me kind of guide myself in personal time, whether catching up with family or friends, and being able to set time away. But usually I do try to be a little bit more religious about taking more than a week if the caseload has been increased, or if I'm doing a lot of overnights, and then I try to make sure that I'm able to do an easy transition into day shift if the next month is going to be mostly day shift.
Gotcha. You know, thinking about all this too, I mean, I can see a hospital knowing maybe somebody's going to go out on maternity leave and knowing in a couple of months they're going to need help. But I feel like a lot of times if somebody gets injured, somebody gets sick, or somebody like, it's not like you probably get a lot of notice for these like requests. So I imagine a lot of what you have to do is kind of like a, like not a lot of time to prepare. Right. I mean, do they call you and say, hey, we need somebody now. Can you be here the next few days, or
tomorrow?
Are you actually, yeah. Or are you actually able to plan far enough in advance to give yourself some structure?
I usually work maybe about 2 months to 3 months in advance, but it's certainly
wow,
has
okay.
been some situations where, especially after the COVID years and recently in a couple months, they do call me, and I have made those exceptions at times where I fly in to a hospital, basically maybe for 3 days in a 48-hour, 72-hour notice. And if I am available and I'm able to switch that, I certainly can do that. And that is to maintain basically the relationship with the team, but also mm-hmm. the relationship with the hospital.
Sure.
You know, making sure that I am taking care of them when they need it. Typically, all hospitals are pretty open to if I want to do any drastic changes to our schedule. They know that I will do that for them if needed. So it usually goes pretty pretty smooth. There is a restriction through traveling or a storm that may delay, you know, and kind of mess up the scheduling, then probably be able to find alternative options for them
gotcha.
In the city or state.
So it's something that you and I spoke a couple years ago when I was writing a lecture on being a relief technician, and you mentioned travel and being one of the main benefits of being able to do this work. And for somebody that also does traveling, like I travel to South Carolina, I've traveled to Austin, I've traveled up north. And one of the problems that I have is going to these places, like went to Savannah for a training session, and people said, oh, what did you see in Savannah? And I was like, I didn't really do anything. How do you make it so that you make that trip? I mean, for me, like when we went to Austin, I've been to Austin 4 or 5 times, never really did much exploring. But then Jeff said, oh, I'm going to come out and see you and hang out with you for a bit. So I actually did something. How do you make that happen? How do you make the work trip become a leisure trip as well?
Actually, I think that probably some of the listeners will be laughing because they know me, and I actually am not a tourist at all. That was one of the biggest surprises, actually, that people kind of find out that I usually try to go in and leave as soon as possible whenever my shift is done, whether I'm just hopping and running to the airport after my overnight shift or as soon as I am able to. There are some cities that, you know, certainly probably there's an event or a concert that is happening, so I do take advantage of that. I do try to see, you know, any of my favorite artists or plays are happening or any special events. And you should do attend to those. But most of the time, I really try to just go in to work and then maybe take some time off and be able to enjoy the city through truly to the fullest.
Yeah, and sometimes for me, it's very dependent on the area. Like, I went to Austin in August, and my partner Robin, she's like, "Did you go out and explore?" I'm like, "No, it's 105 by noon. I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm going from Airbnb to the hospital back."
Yes, weather suddenly can go ahead and take a little bit of that away.
Yeah, I mean, just recently I went up to Chicago to give a lecture, and they said, "Did you do anything?" I'm like, "No, it's Chicago in January. I'm not doing anything."
Pretty cold.
So for do you have any plans to expand or decrease your range in the future? Like, do you feel like this is going to be an expanding business, or are you kind of content with where you're at?
I think we're gonna stay where we are now. I am certainly opening a couple of channels to international work.
Nice.
Negotiating things a little bit in the UK and also in back home. Well, actually where Massey University is, they have a couple of hospitals nearby. So it's kind of playing the logistics of one season, certainly the time of year to travel there, their needs, and also putting that into the commute here in the United States. So those are going to be the new challenges probably for the end of this year. I certainly have seen a little bit of a transition more to academia. So I am jumping more to university work than private practice, which is exciting. And obviously it has its own headaches at times. We're excited for that for sure.
One thing I meant to ask earlier is, do you work mostly in private practice, or do you have like corporate accounts, or what do you typically see?
It's quite a little bit of a mix between corporate hospitals, but my relationship goes directly through the hospital and not through the corporation. I have been invited to a couple of corporations to do work for them. And usually what ends up happening is that then they like for me to just stay within their group. And obviously I have longstanding relationships with several other hospitals that probably would not like to move that route and make sure that everyone gets a little bit of help.
Yeah.
So, you know, for somebody listening that says, you know what, this appeals to me. Like, I want to do this. I want to be a locum kind of travel technician. Like, from through your experiences, what advice would you have for them? Like, what recommendations would you say? Like, if somebody were to ask you how do you get started, what would be your response?
Yeah, I think I get asked that probably about once a month, usually.
Oh, wow.
I get an
okay.
email or a call that someone wants to kind of see how to get their logistics getting started. And depending on the work, sometimes it will be beneficial to get an LLC just to cover yourself, especially licensing. If anything were to happen, a lot of the beginning tasks that I kind of walk people through is looking at the region that you are in, and basically looking at the hospitals that you would like to work. Also setting up the structure of timing. So how much time do you have available to travel, commute, and also be able to cover the shifts, especially if you have any family, to kind of consider those things. We then kind of talk a little bit about the pay rate in that area and what will be feasible for you as a business individual, and also for the hospital, for it to be appealing for both parties. A lot of it is actually walking them through their insurance, how they're going to switch from being in a group insurance to now doing your individual. And usually then we talk a little bit about taxes and kind of discussing how they may be able to address that. And usually by that, I always tell them, find a good CPA and they will do all the work for you. And
I hadn't even considered all the state income taxes from however many different states. My gosh.
It is. Right now, obviously, it's getting ready for that. And I always have to get a bottle of champagne after I send that because it is painful.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, it is certainly painful. And there's two particular states that certainly take the hit a little bit. So you do have to be prepared for those areas. I think a lot of individuals think about potentially taking a loan just to facilitate things a little bit on the beginning. And I have seen a couple individuals that actually works for them. And then some individuals that I actually just kind of route them into getting a credit card with an airline and using that as a way to get started and basically facilitating kind of the business exchange. And also this is how you're going to be commuting to those hospitals, and we'll be able to cover that.
Yeah. Earn those miles, earn those night stays.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And the goal for that is, I certainly have the discussion actually recently with a ER veterinarian that does relief basically at a national level like me. And we are always talking about the changes in the airlines. So we're like, did you see that this airline did this, this and that? And we're like, well, we're going to switch to this other one. So that, you know, you eventually kind of catch up to that and you're in the news basically of what is the latest planning for airlines and the industry in general. So it is fascinating to see that, and also making sure that the points and miles that you're accumulating from the business and the commute of traveling for work, that you're able to use those for personal timing mm-hmm. down the road.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your master's degrees. I got a two, maybe three part question. What made you decide to go for that? And the follow-ups to that is, what did you anticipate was going to happen after you got it, and how did that relate to what actually happened?
Yeah, so a lot of the transition into it was pretty much very easy to already have had that initiating pathway into the master's in clinical psychology that I transitioned from. So I had grants, and I certainly had the financing for it. So I kind of needed to relocate that into a different program. And University of Missouri obviously started offering the biomedicine emphasis in veterinary medicine and surgery, which I think some of our colleagues have gone through the program as well. And it was certainly new. It certainly opened a lot of the perspectives of diving more into the pathophysiology and the whole works about the what's, why, whys and whats of disease process. And that certainly, you know, it's an investment. It's certainly a commitment for at least a year and a half, plus if they require clinical years. And I think the curriculum certainly has changed recently as of a couple of years. It was certainly very rewarding at the end to get that knowledge, and certainly has helped me build more of proficient in the clinical aspect of it, knowing exactly how to best advocate for my patients at the early stages of a disease, and I'll be able to also discuss the cases a little bit further with the clinicians, with their specialty or emergency. With that, you know, it does open a couple possibilities down the road for industry. But more than anything, what I saw the benefit is to, if in the event that I want to go to academia fully, that this will be able to help me guide through that. And certainly that is one of the major of the discussions of the new goals here that we're going to see probably in the end of this year to transition into some of the UK universities, and also in New Zealand and Australia. So it does change a little bit of perspective of that. The challenges that come with it, I mean, it's more of anything, it's the commitment. You do have to commit through it. It does set out a little bit of time, especially if you're working full time. I think that was probably the hardest thing for me, to be able to set the time away, not only from the times that they expect you to visit the campus for I think it was like about 3 weeks for me. New Zealand, there was 3 months that I needed to travel in total, and those will be your clinical applications for large animal and small animal, and going through some of the semesters.
Gotcha. You know, one one thing I just thought of too. So, I mean, obviously you've invested a lot, you've built kind of this network and what you're doing as far as locum work. How long do you see yourself doing that? Is that still like your long-term goal, your long-term plan, or do you see yourself maybe transitioning away from that at some point, or are you just kind of more of a day-to-day, like, I'm enjoying this now, I'm going to keep doing it until I'm not?
Yeah, I think I get asked that, you know, a lot of questions. Obviously, things have changed drastically within the field that I think, you know, it looks promising in some areas as we develop these new guidelines for the profession. I think I will probably stay in doing this locum probably for the next three, maybe three, 4 years. Enjoying the best out of it and eventually making a decision to transition into industry or into academia. Certainly, right now I'm finishing my master's in business administration. So eventually transitioning also into management. And I think that is something that, you know, we all have to think eventually in at one point in your career in veterinary medicine is where is it going to end? Where is the pathway of you planning to retire, if we can even retire? And sometimes, you know, you think, well, I will think that later. I will think that later when we get closer to that time. I think that, you know, I certainly urge every individual, and I counsel a lot of my my technicians, especially the ones in the mid-level career to senior years, is to really start assessing what are the benefits of the clinical aspect, where do they see themselves staying within the field, whether or not they need to do a jump outside of veteran medicine, but really to start focusing on how they will like to prepare for retirement or at least a transition outside of clinical.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Simon, we are almost at the end of our hour here, and we really appreciate you being here. Is there anything that we haven't talked about today that you want to get out to the listeners?
I think certainly probably within the changes and transitions of our field, I think we probably need to stay certainly positive and advocate for each other and be there for each other. I mean, it certainly takes a whole team and it takes a village, as the saying goes, for us to change things. And I think that exciting things are on our way, and we should be vigilant of those changes and be able to make our profession a little bit better for the next generation.
Awesome.
Excellent advice. Is there a person you would like to see us interview on a future episode or a topic you'd like to see us discuss?
Certainly, and I certainly have a list of individuals that will be very, very happy, so I will send that over to you guys.
Yes, please. Yes, please. Yeah. Absolutely.
Anyone off the top of your head?
I think you guys have covered some of the main ones. I think Leah Contreras is one of my dear's co-worker.
And okay.
Kind of jumping into lecturing here and to maintain the momentum. So I certainly send you guys here.
We look forward to that list. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
And now we are down to your would you rather question. Are you ready for it?
Yes, that's it.
So you've got to choose either one, two, or three, and I'll give you the question.
Let's do two.
Okay.
Oh, I love this question.
I know Jeff would love this one. and it's appropriate for someone who travels. Would you rather go to the beach during a hurricane or to the mountains in a blizzard?
Oh, that's a very easy one. The mountains in the middle of a blizzard. I mean, come on. I can go and ski downhill. It will be a thrill for mm-hmm, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have done both.
The cabin for sure, but
yeah.
For me, it's you guys know I hate being cold, so I would always go to a beach in a hurricane.
Yeah. Yeah. I have done both and I thoroughly enjoyed both.
I will have to go down to the Caribbean then and try the hurricane in the beach.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, Simon, it's been wonderful to catch up and chat with you. Thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us about all of this, and super fascinating. We really appreciate your time, and thank you for stopping by.
Thank you.
You bet. Caffeinators, you guys take care, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, everybody.
Hello, Caffeinators! We wanted to thank Dog Days Consulting for managing our social media and helping with the interior design here at the Vet Tech Cafe. They don't just do social media, they can help you identify your brand through brand coaching.
The founder is a CVPM with 15 years experience in veterinary practice management. They are a small business proudly serving the veterinary community, and we are thrilled to be working with them. Check them out at www.dogdaysconsulting.com. Hey, Caffeinators! We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As everybody is well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession. In addition, we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave or Jeff as the hosts, or those opinions expressed by our guests, are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity inside or outside of the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com or visit our website, www.vettechcafe.com. Lastly, whatever platform you utilize to hear our dulcet tones, please rate and review our podcast and like and follow our Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn pages as well to see what we're up to. From all of us at the Vet Tech Cafe, have yourself a great day.